energy to you, keeping me waiting. Mr. Jeffrey has requested an opportunity to address the committee on a particular matter, and I've agreed to that. And I'm going to afford him the opportunity right now, very quickly, for us to hopefully get this thing out of the way so that we can deal with the matters on our agenda, if the officials from the Auditor General will just bear with us.
Chair, thanks. It was just really the issue of the Sunday Times article in the main headline of Protector Under Attack, and then subheaded MPs join ANC top brass in questioning Madonsela's impartiality. And my concern was, you know, I don't remember that happening. And that, you know, the we have to perform our oversight role. Sometimes the questioning gets quite vigorous. I recall that it wasn't only from ANC members that happened. Ms. Schaefer asked some quite tough questions as well. But yet the article, they don't actually in the body of the article say much about what happened, although they do say that she came under fire from ANC MPs when she appeared before the Justice Portfolio Committee for Justice on Friday, and that she was questioned about being selective, perceptions that she was selective in her investigations. I don't recall us actually raising that issue. She raised the issue of an accusation from the Minister of Higher Education, but the question that we had was is she not investigating too much? Should she not be more particular? That she has a discretion in terms of the Public Protectors Act. So, Chair, I just really felt it would be useful if the committee as a whole does a statement, or you that get mandated by the committee maybe to show it to other parties as well, but to do a statement putting the facts straight, because I just see this refrain of the protector being attacked in Parliament on Friday, being taken up by other media bodies, and that was not the case. Even the issue of the, which I suppose could be linked to the partiality of her attending the Dawn function, was specifically raised by Mr. Sivagnoni at the end, and he prefaced it by on a lighter note, or something like that. And I think my recollection of the outcome of the discussion was that she did need to be more careful, and that she herself had said she wouldn't be attending any party events from any party in future. But I don't think there was any attack, and I just think it would be useful if the committee as a whole, not just one component, clarifies it.
Dean Smith and then Debbie Schaefer.
Chairman, I think that it could do no harm and would be happy to delegate the task to you. I think the report was sufficiently vague and wide-ranging to make it clear that they were talking about ANC MPs not just in the committee but outside it. But I think it nevertheless does no harm to place on the record. Incidentally, in my recollection, it was Ms. Adams who raised, and simply as a question, the fact that Lady Zimande had attacked her. So there you are. Whereas I think, if I remember from Sunday, this refers simply to ANC MPs. Yeah, it was Ms. Adams that wrote that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I must say I also saw with some interest the huge headline in Sunday Times on Sunday. I don't think it was a true and accurate reflection of the meeting. It was something that was raised right at the end. I was also slightly concerned, though, regarding the statement that apparently you didn't answer the question regarding whether you had received a complaint from Ms. Shah, the Deputy Public Protector. Now, I think if you have, then we'd like to know about it. But, I mean, it was made quite clear by the Public Protector that she had, in fact, sent the complaint to us for investigation. It's not like it was an assault on her. She had actually asked us to investigate. And at this point, I would agree that I think this issue has been blown out of proportion. And I think that we should have a look at the complaint, as we agreed to do on Friday, and take it from there. But I would like some clarity on the issue of the Deputy Public Protector. Thank you.
Steve.
Again, from our side, we have no objection to the clarification and the placing of record of what happened, as Honourable JJ has indicated. There was, yeah, correct. But, Chair, just the subsequent issues that have also been raised about this complaint, we'd also like to know what is happening with that and what is the status of this report to Parliament or something like that. But thank you, Chair. We support that.
Anybody else? Nobody. Yes.
One other thing, I would like us just to agree as to the process from here onwards, because it did seem from the meeting that it was said that there was a view that we should have hearings and people may wish to be anonymous. I wouldn't like us to have an inquiry that's behind closed doors, and I would like to just clarify how exactly we are going to deal with it and if we can have some idea of the time frame as well.
All right. Okay. Thank you for all that. And I'll put something together and run it by you all before issuing it. As regards to the complaint, at this point, all we have is a letter from an anonymous source, unsigned. And as I said to a journalist, normally what I do is take those and throw them in the nearest waste bin, which in this case is what I did. But a short while later, we received a letter from the public protector herself requesting the matter be investigated. That then gave that anonymous letter status because she refers to it in her letter. At this point, that is all we had. And I wanted us as a committee to decide how we're going to deal with this. I didn't want to say to the media, well, we are going to deal with it in the following way, without first running it by you and getting input from you. I don't have the authority to say to the media, we're going to do it in the following way, because I haven't discussed it with you, you haven't made input, and it would be wholly inappropriate for me to have done so. And so when I was asked about letters and such like from anyone else, including the Deputy Public Protector, my response was, I'm unable to respond to you. So that is where we are. I had no intention of this matter coming on to our discussion this morning, because I had said to Mr. Romano, we need to find space sometime next week perhaps, because there's the issue raised by Ms. Smuts last week, where she had made a request to address the committee. We haven't acceded to her request yet. There's this matter. So we need to find space and time whereby we can apply our minds to these matters and come to a decision as to how we can move forward on this particular matter. All right? Okay. So that deals with that. Sir, we're now in your hands.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members. We tried to put the documents onto the screens, but we were unfortunately, we were unable to do that. So I think there will be 3 hard copies which have been handed out. And we will be going through all the 3 copies. The one is like a slides, audit outcomes of justice portfolio. The other is quite a detailed document. It's called a portfolio committee briefing, which is about 33 pages. And the last document has, I think it's on A3, the first page. It's got quite a colourful document, the first page, and in the second page we'll have some narrative to it. It's okay, how I will take the committee through this presentation is we will firstly look at just the first 2 slides, because there will be a lot of overlapping between the 3 documents. We will just go through the first 2 slides on the audit outcomes of justice portfolio notes, the level of assurance, and then the 3-year audit outcome analysis. So those are the only 2 slides that we're going to go through. The rest of the information that's in there, I will take you through when I discuss the briefing document in detail. So if you can all go to the audit outcomes of justice portfolio document, and if we turn to page 3, which talks of the combined assurance on risk management in the public sector. This is something we just want to share with the committee in the sense that there's various role players.
Just hold. Honourable members, it's this spreadsheet, and then in addition to that, there's another two documents. The bottom of the one says PFMA audit outcomes for 2011-12 financial year, and the other one reads audit outcomes of Justice Portfolio financial year ended 31 March 2012.
The audit outcomes, Justice Portfolio, on page 3. When we talk of the combined assurance model. Chairperson, the purpose of putting this model in the documentation is just to share with the committee the various levels of engagements that we have, as well as the various levels of assurances that that we expect. So firstly, if you start on the left-hand side, you'll find that they are those individuals or those levels that are most involved within the auditee or within the department or the entity, and we refer to them as management and those charged with governance. Thereafter, as we go further on, you have more the oversight roles, which is your audit committee, then obviously the portfolio committee, and then on the extreme right-hand side, which in my document is more in the purple block, it's like your external parties. Although internal audit is a function within the department, but it's an assurance function rather than a management function. So they give you like an independent assurance, so it's internal audit. Then you have coordinating institutions, for example, your COCTAS, CELDAS, etc., in certain environments. And finally, you have external audit. Then as you go just further down, which says required assurance level, which is like the third block, and you'll find there that management should be giving all parties the most amount of assurance on whatever they represent. So in other words, if it's a set of financial statements that we receive, management should have extensively reviewed them to give us and to give all other bodies extensive comfort on those financial statements. You'll find the executive authority does a moderate assurance because the executive authority is not involved on the day-to-day operations of the entity. Similarly, the audit committee would also be moderate assurance. And if you look at the oversight, we say it's limited assurance. So it's yourselves as the committee, because you normally get the information after the fact, and you're not involved in the day-to-day or on the quarterly or monthly review of financial and performance reports. Then thereafter, if you look again at the extreme right, internal audit, again, extensive, external audit, extensive assurance, because we do perform procedures to be able to obtain assurance and to express an opinion. And coordinated institutions, similarly like yourselves, it's limited assurance. Then if you go now to the fourth block, it exactly explains how each of these assurance levels are actually obtained. So if you look, for example, at senior management, the accounting officer, you'll find it's through controls via leadership and financial and performance management. And you'll find that these talk to the root causes that we normally have in our audit reports. Thereafter, if you look at the executive authority, it's obviously through interactions with management, with auditors, and through commitments that are obtained from the executive authority. If you look at audit committee, again, they obtain assurance through internal audit, through external audit on the internal control environment. Yourselves as an oversight body, it's more interactions and commitments. Internal audit, again, similar to external audit, looking at controls and coordinating institutions through interactions and commitments. Then right at the bottom, this is no indication of our assessment, but in our general report, we will be having an overall assurance indicator to say where we think the assurance is adequate, where it requires improvement, and where it is inadequate. So I think this is just for the committee to look at. And when I come right towards the end of the presentation, we will be using this model to actually show, for example, when it comes to financial statements, misstatements, how this model actually fits in into that as an example. Then going on to the next page, which is a three-year audit outcome. If we start on the extreme right, you'll find that the table on the right refers to 3 years ago, then the middle was 2010-11, and on the left it's 2011-12. And what you will find is that the green block has shrunk a bit, which means that the green actually is the desired audit outcome. In other words, a clean audit. So financial statements unqualified, no predetermined objectives findings in the audit report and no compliance findings in the audit report. And then the table below that actually gives you the various entities and the audit outcomes over the past 3 years, which then talks to the table. And for your purposes, I've also got the page numbers in the annual report, if it's of interest. So Department of Justice, the audit reports are on page 95 to 98 of the annual report. For CARA, which is the Criminal Assets Recovery Account, it's also in the Department of Justice's audit annual report. It's on page 166 to 167. Then I've only highlighted sort of the major entities, so I might miss a few here. Special Investigating Unit, page 37 and page 37 to 40 of the annual report. Legal Aid South Africa, 85 to 86. Public Protector, 103 to 105. Human Rights Commission, 63 to 64. And NPA, 83 to 86. So that's just for your information if you would like to refer to the annual reports. However, what we would like to just highlight here is that the qualifications have actually now reduced. In 2009-10, there were two qualified audits, which was NPA and Justice, the department. Last year, it was just the department, and again this year is the Department of Justice. However, going right to the top, to the green block, over the past 2 years, you had three entities that were sitting in that block. In 2009-10, it was the SIU, Legal Aid, and President's Fund. In 2010-11, it was Legal Aid again, President's Fund. However, SIU moved to the yellow block, so Guardian's Fund then came into the green block. And for 2011-12, it's only the President's Fund. So the President's Fund has actually remained constant in that block. And later on in the presentation, we will go through exactly what led to these regressions from the green to the yellow. The rest of the slides that we have here is just pie charts and this high-level information, which I think will be of interest to the committee. However, through my detailed briefing document, which we will go through now, all the information is contained in this, and this is just sort of to give you a high-level picture of the various findings and the various material misstatements, etc. And below each graph or each chart, you will find there will be some information which talks to the chart. So if you can all go through the detailed document, which is called the Portfolio Committee Briefing, the 33-page document, PFMA Audit Outcomes for 11-12 Financial Year. On page 1, which is the introduction, we're just highlighting that we've covered the entire portfolio for the department with the exception of third-party funds. The 11-12 audit for third-party funds has not yet commenced, as financial statements have not yet been received for auditing. So the analysis here excludes third-party funds. If we go on to page 2, which is the audit opinions history, we've just got one more year in here. In the slides, we had 3 years here. We've got 4 years. And the information here is consistent with those slides. And as I said, we will just go through the regressions and those that have remained consistent. If you look at the Department of Justice, qualified over the past 4 years. However, I think what's noteworthy is that we are remaining now with just one qualification. So there is regular expenditure qualification that was there last year in 10-11 has now been resolved. So it's only the third-party funds issue that has an impact on the department that has now been qualified. And later in the presentation, we will go through exactly what are the issues with the third-party funds, what are the options in terms of solving the problems, etc. If you look at NPA, there's been positive movement, however, not yet in the green. So it's still in the yellow, which means that it's unqualified from a financial point of view. However, there are compliance or performance information findings. And later on, we will see exactly where the findings are. Similarly with CARA, in the case of CARA, it's purely the material misstatements to financial statements. In the case of Guardian's Fund, we mentioned earlier from the slides, this is one of those that has regressed from the green to the yellow. So the green is the ultimate that everyone wants to achieve, which is a clean audit. And the reason here is that there were misstatements in the financial statements which were submitted for auditing. Therefore, there was a compliance issue that led to the regression. So it's still unqualified. As I said, with the exception of the department, all other entities are unqualified financially. A special investigating unit has remained the same from the previous year. Legal Aid South Africa has also regressed, and there was some findings from a compliance point of view of supply chain management, which we will go through later. The public protector has remained the same in the yellow block, financially unqualified with other findings. The President's Fund has remained quite stable in the sense of the green block, which is a clean audit. And then we've got South African Human Rights Commission, which has remained unqualified over the last few years. However, there are other findings in the audit report. Then further down, we've now analyzed the qualification areas, and we will just focus on the department itself. And we can see over the 4 years that the number of qualification issues have actually decreased. If you look at the extreme right-hand block, which is the 11-12 audit, you see that there are four crosses. However, all of those four line items are linked to one issue, which is the third-party funds. So if that issue is resolved, then obviously the audit opinion would have been unqualified. And as we said, the irregular expenditure has improved from 10-11 to 11-12. Going on to the next page, which is page 3, we now talk to other matters just about halfway down the page. So we've done the financial part. We will now look at the predetermined objectives and thereafter the compliance. On predetermined objectives, what we will find is that there's only one entity in the portfolio, which is the Special Investigating Unit, which has got issues on predetermined objectives or audit of performance information. And later on in the briefing, you will see exactly what those issues are. If we look at the Department of Justice, and if we look at the Public Protector, and we look at the SA Human Rights Commission, we will find that all of those three entities have actually improved in this area. Thereafter, if we look just below on the compliance with laws and regulations, what we will find that there's basically, we could say, two key issues that are common across the entire portfolio, which is supply chain management, in other words, non-compliance with supply chain management regulations, and financial statements which are received for auditing, which contain material misstatements, which then have to be corrected in order to obtain the audit opinion that that we see ultimately was obtained. So the message here is that if the audit process did not identify the misstatements, and if we had to express an opinion at that point in time when the financial statements were received, the opinions would have been different to what we actually see now as the ultimate audit opinion. In other words, some of them would have been qualified rather than unqualified. So it was the audit process that actually drove the material misstatements to be identified and then to be corrected by management. Then on page 4, we actually now talk to the qualification matter in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And we mentioned that it comprises of just one qualification matter relating to departmental revenue, receivables for departmental revenue, provisions, and contingent liabilities. Those line items are consistent with the previous year. And then we also say that this was mainly due to the inadequacy of systems to ensure proper controls and financial reporting with respect to the relationship between the fund and the department. The JDAS system in place, which is the information system for reporting on transactions, is inadequate to provide reliable information for ensuring accuracy of financial reporting. The TPF audit for 11-12 has not yet been conducted as financial statements have not yet been received. So I think, Chair and members, the message here is that the third-party funds, there's basically three areas that actually need to be looked into. The one is the systems issue, which we accept that the system in place, JDAS, is not adequate for financial reporting. It is merely, you know, inputting of information. And the challenge that the department has is that in each of the courts, JDAS is not an integrated system. So it's a very, each court has got like an independent JDAS system of its own. And this leads to challenges in the sense that if there are errors or there's rules, IT rules, etc., that, you know, are being compromised, you cannot go once in and update all the systems. Each court will have to be evaluated individually and rectified individually. So there is that system issue. In other words, the system itself cannot give you reliable financial reports to be able to prepare financial statements monthly, quarterly, annually. Secondly, it's a people issue. So in other words, what we are trying to teach is the daily and the monthly controls at court level. So in other words, is there cash reconciliation on a daily basis? Is the bank reconciliation happening on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis? So these are some of the basic controls that will go a long way in improving the environment. And thirdly, is the record keeping. So in other words, it's the retention of records so that when the auditors come along, records are available for the auditors to verify the validity, the accuracy, and the completeness of those records. So the solution to fixing the problem is a very basic solution. However, the magnitude of the problem is quite extensive. The reason being that you've got many geographical locations to go and fix. And even if on an annual basis those visits happen from head office, it's not going to be possible to actually go and visit each and every court every year. So what we have actually proposed to the department is that let the basic controls in terms of just inputting the information. So as soon as the receipt comes in, as soon as the payment is made out, ensure that at the court level that basic capturing happens correctly. And secondly, record management is it's a responsibility of the courts. So on a daily basis, there should be proper cash-ups, cash controls. There should be reviewing of reconciliations and just proper record management. So it's just basic financial disciplines that should be happening at the court level. Then from the head office level, the more detailed analysis and interrogation of the information and validation, etc., should be taking place here because of the skills. The skills reside at head office rather than at the courts level. So until the courts are capacitated with proper competencies and skills, head office involvement is vital in bringing the more in-depth analysis of the report in order to prepare credible financial statements. And going on to page five, when we talk of the key focus areas, the rest of the document is actually based on this model that you see in yellow, green, and red. So I will talk quite a bit on this diagram, and thereafter we will speak at a very high level on the rest of the document. And what we will do is we will go through each of these entities, going into detail as to exactly the yellow, the green, and the red, and in the narrative that comes later, we will obviously just focus on some of the more important issues. If you look at this diagram, the focus you'll see is on supply chain management, predetermined objectives, which is performance information or service delivery, with HR management, IT controls, and material misstatements or material errors in financial statements. Now, if we look at the department itself, we will see that supply chain management, there has been improvement. So from a red in the prior year, they've moved to a yellow. The reason being, and if you look later on, or if you refer to the annual report or later on in this document, you will see that the amount of irregular expenditure has actually increased quite a bit in the prior year. And the reason being that to resolve the qualification on the irregular expenditure over the last 2 years, the department embarked on an extensive exercise to go through every batch and every payment and every procurement that had happened to identify all instances of irregular expenditure in order to resolve the qualification. And therefore, by doing that exercise, much more irregular expenditure was identified this year relating to previous years, and the financial statements were then corrected. And therefore, you'll find that the 2010-11 irregular expenditure has multiplied quite a bit. On predetermined objectives, there's been an improvement. In the previous year, we will recall that there were findings on the reliability of the information and the usefulness of the information. So in other words, the strategic planning, the indicators, the targets, etc., and on the reliability side, the validity, the accuracy, and the completeness of the actual reported performance against the planned performance. So there were findings that were in the audit report last year. This year, from a findings point of view, there's no findings in the audit report for the department on performance information. HR management, the findings in the audit report are fairly consistent year on year, where we talk of leave, appointments and performance contracts not being in place, and also the vetting of staff not always being performed. IT controls, you will not find that in the audit report. This is more an analysis of the management report, as IT controls may not have a direct impact on the ultimate audit outcome. In other words, if the IT controls are inadequate, we then go with a substantive audit audit approach in order to get our levels of assurance from an audit point of view, and therefore we work around those IT controls. So it is an area that requires attention, however, it does not have any real direct impact on the audit outcome. And then the last block, you see the material errors in financial statements submitted, and you will see that with the exception of two, which is Legal Aid South Africa and the President's Fund, every other entity had material errors in the financial statements which were submitted for auditing, which required to be revisited and rectified. Then, coming again to the Department of Justice, there will be, you will notice in the audit report, other areas of non-compliance. However, we have not highlighted all of those here. The reason being is that we just wanted to focus on what are the key areas and what are the pervasive areas. So, for example, in the department, there has been some issues on safeguarding of assets, asset management. And then the next issue will come out through the financial health in my presentation, which is the payment of creditors within 30 days, the impact of that on accruals, and the impact of that on future budgets and expenditure management for the next financial year. Going on to the National Prosecuting Authority, supply chain management, we will find now that in the 2011-12 financial year, there's just one finding remaining in the audit report, which is permission to perform other remunerative work outside of the department. On predetermined objectives, you'll see there's no matters. HR management, there's no matters. IT controls, there has been some improvement. And material errors in financial statements, you will find that that has also been there. And what's new in the NPA audit report is also the 30-day issue. In other words, payment of creditors within 30 days. And again, similar to the department, we will discuss later on the impact on the budget, the impact on the accruals, and how it impacted on the audit report. With respect to criminal assets recovery account, CARA, I don't think there's anything to mention there except that there were material errors in the financial statements. With respect to the Guardians Fund, that was one of them where we mentioned there was a regression, and the regression being that there were material errors in the financial statements submitted this year, but it was not the case in 10-11. With respect to the SIU, we will find supply chain management findings still being there. With respect to predetermined objectives, you will see that we actually mentioned there's been a regression. So in other words, in addition to the findings that were there in 10-11, there's also another issue which is in the audit report this year, which is the reliability of the actual performance against the predetermined targets. So what we're basically saying is that the validity, accuracy, and the completeness, in order for us to verify the actual reported information against the source documentation, there were issues in there which then obviously made the reliability of the information questionable. So all the findings, for the majority of them that were there last year, are there again this year. In addition, there's an additional finding, which is the reliability of the information. HR management has nothing to bring to this committee. IT control, we will find that when you go into the IT, which I will not go into too much of detail because the findings are quite pervasive, but you'll find that the SIU IT findings make up the bulk of the IT findings in this report. And in material errors in financial statements submitted for auditing, there were no material errors in the previous year. There were material errors in the 11-12 audit year. Then going to Legal Aid South Africa, we will find that by and large, the entity is green, with the exception this year of supply chain management. There were no supply chain management findings last year. However, in the 11-12 audit, we identified that the tax clearance certificates were not obtained for service providers, which then obviously led to irregular expenditure and an audit report matter. So with the exception of that finding, really there's nothing else to really go into detail there. With respect to the public protector of South Africa, supply chain management, it's fine over the years, no matters. Predetermined objectives, there was a reliability issue last year, which we spoke about in terms of the validity, accuracy, completeness of information, but that has been rectified, so there's been an improvement in 11-12. HR management, no issues. IT, really nothing to really go into detail. And material errors in financial statements, again, no improvement. In other words, over the years, there still continues to be material errors in the financial statements. The other issue to actually take note of is similar to the Department of Justice and NPA. There was also a 30-day payment issue at the public protector. In other words, creditors not being paid within 30 days. And that was in 10-11 and the 11-12 financial year. I think President's Fund, everything is green, so there's nothing to go into detail there. Then with respect to the South African Human Rights Commission, we'll find supply chain management. There's been similar findings to the previous year. Predetermined objectives, again, there's been an improvement. In 10-11, there were findings on the usefulness of the information. In other words, the targets were not time-bound. In 11-12, we've got no findings in the audit report from a predetermined objectives point of view. HR management is fine. IT controls, there's nothing of significance. It's a fairly simple IT environment in place. And material errors in financial statements, again, we're saying no improvement. In other words, it's been the same in the previous year and the 11-12 financial year. I think what's important to note is that when we talk of supply chain management transgressions, each of these entities have in their audit reports a paragraph on irregular expenditure. So in other words, each of these transgressions actually led to irregular expenditure, which is then reported in the audit reports under expenditure management. And if we go into a bit more detail on supply chain management, if we look at the Department of Justice, really the issue here is mainly on compliance with the regulations in terms of the thresholds. In other words, up to 500,000, what are the requirements, three quotations, etc., and above 500,000 rand to go out on tender. So what we found is that there were deviations in terms of those thresholds. In other words, those processes were not complied with. Deviations were either not appropriate or there was no deviation in place. So those are actually the findings there which led to the irregular expenditure which was disclosed in the financial statements. Therefore, there's no qualification on this, but the compliance issue has been raised in the audit report. And what you're basically saying is that management needs to bring in additional processes. In other words, what we will normally find in the environments is that there are checklists in place. There may be various interventions in place. For example, supply chain checklist, have you ensured this has been done, that has been done before actually procuring or before payment being made. However, the monitoring of the controls are inadequate. So in other words, even by having a checklist in place, it doesn't take away the responsibility of management to, on a regular basis, ensure that those checklists are being properly completed. And secondly, if individuals are falsely completing those documentation, then there has to be some discipline issue. And that's what we're actually saying under the recommendation. Then going on to page 6, similar to the previous year, there were employees of the department who performed remunerative work, but not within the department, it's outside the department, and in order to do that, you actually need the permission of the executive authority in terms of the Public Service Act. So those are the only findings in the audit report on the Department of Justice with respect to supply chain management. With regards to the NPA, it's just the remunerative work which is performed outside of the department. So that's the only issue there that actually came through. In the previous year, you would recall that there have been other issues, but those have been resolved, so it's just this one remaining issue. With respect to CARA, Guardians Fund, there's no procurement there, so therefore there were no supply chain management findings. With respect to the SIU, It's mainly, again, the threshold issue. So in other words, for procurement above 500,000 rand, there has to be a proper tender process. There was approved deviation certificate, which actually lapsed during the year. So in other words, all procurement that should have happened for consultants, I think it was after January, should have gone through a normal tender process, and that hasn't happened. And therefore, there's irregular expenditure in the SIU. With regards to Legal Aid South Africa, it's purely tax clearance certificates from legal practitioners that the entity actually deals with, and those are not in place. However, in this case, it's more of a policy issue. In other words, the policy of the entity was not aligned to the regulations in place. They do have a manual, and the manual did not require them to actually go and get the tax clearance certificate. However, it is a requirement in terms of the supply chain management regulations. So therefore, the policies in this case need to be enhanced to ensure that those tax clearance certificates are actually obtained. With regard to the public protector and the President's Fund, there's no matter from a supply chain management point of view. With regard to the South African Human Rights Commission, in this case, we find under the root cause and under the recommendation, we actually call for some training intervention to take place in this environment. The reality is that with respect to supply chain management, the practice notes, the guidelines, the guidance, the regulations, it evolves on an ongoing basis. So in other words, if an entity does not keep up to date with National Treasury's website and the information flow from National Treasury, it's going to be very difficult to keep up with all the latest requirements. And that's exactly what had happened in the case of the South African Human Rights Commission. With the exception of the first finding, which is that award made to a supplier who obviously did not have a tax clearance certificate, the other two findings, which is quotations and contracts awarded to bidders who did not submit a declaration, and where the preference point system was not adequately implemented, those two talk to the latest developments in this year and the previous year. So in other words, there's a need for a training intervention within that environment to ensure that supply chain management officials are on a regular basis briefed on what the requirements are in order for them to actually comply with the latest regulations. On predetermined objectives, as we said earlier, with the exception of the Special Investigating Unit, which was the only entity that actually had audit findings in the audit report, there were only three other entities that had findings, but they were not audit report findings under predetermined objectives. They were more just additional matter findings. And the three are the Department of Justice, NPA, and the Public Protector of South Africa. And the reason being for these three entities, and you will see exactly when we mentioned earlier on about the 30-day issue and the accruals issue and the impact on the budget, you will find that that is exactly linked to the underperformance that we will see in under this section. So in other words, what we're saying is that these are the three entities that actually have funding issues from a financial health point of view, and these are the exact three entities that have also had targets not being met in the performance information. So we could draw a link between the financial and the performance management of these entities. So for example, with regards to the Department of Justice, we will find that 72% of the total planned targets were not totally achieved in the financial year. And then there were also material misstatements in the performance report, which we obtained at the end of May. These were then corrected, and obviously, there were no findings of a material nature in the audit report. Under root cause and recommendation, we actually state here that the monitoring of the performance against predetermined targets on an ongoing basis was not actually performed. And this will serve the purpose of management knowing exactly where they are in terms of their planned targets, what still needs to be done in terms of corrective action, and then actually to lead the organization to actually achieve on those targets. The challenge could have been the base that the department had come from in the previous year, having numerous audit findings in the audit report in terms of reliability and usefulness of the information. So the improvements are noted. However, in terms of actual achievement, now the focus needs to move on the reliability of the information. And this can only be done if performance is monitored on a quarterly basis in terms of actual performance, and secondly, in terms of the reliability of that information. So when the quarterly reports actually take place, we've actually recommended that the internal audit actually audits the actual performance for the quarter to supporting documentation to ensure then that what's reported on a quarterly basis is actually credible. And this will serve two purposes. It will give the external auditor some level of comfort. And secondly, it will assure management that records are in place, which was a major challenge in the previous year. With regards to the NPA, it's a very similar issue. Out of 11 planned targets, 4 were not achieved. With regards to the special investigating unit, we'll find in this instance there's quite a few findings which I will just try and summarize. The one is the explanation of variances were not in the performance report. In other words, where the planned target was not achieved, so in other words, the reported actual performance is less than the target, then there was no explanation for the reason for those variances. Then there were also inconsistency between the plan and the reported objectives. In other words, the strategic plan had certain objectives, and not all of those objectives were in the annual performance report. So the annual performance report could have had more objectives, could have had less objectives, could have had different objectives. And you'll find that these are consistent with what was reported in 10 and 11. Then there was also late submission of the strategic plan. It wasn't submitted to the executive within 6 months before the beginning of the financial year, so that's a compliance issue. Then from a PFMA point of view, there's a requirement to have proper systems in place from an internal control system, risk and financial and performance management point of view. So that is what was lacking, which actually led to this performance report findings, in the sense that there was no system for the planning, monitoring, reviewing, and reporting of the information. And then this led to the reliability of the information being questionable from an accuracy and validity point of view. What we will find is that, and this is what we mentioned from earlier on when we went through the diagram, that on performance information there's been a regression in the SIU, and the reason being that the reliability of the information was not questioned in the previous year. However, the reliability of the information was now questioned in the 11-12 financial year. So in other words, the validity, accuracy, completeness of the actual performance against supporting documentation, we actually had findings in there. So again, what we are recommending here is that there must be a proper system in place during the strategic planning point of view, that when your targets, indicators, and objectives are determined, that there's a proper thought process. In other words, the responsible people from within the strategic unit having a knowledge of what the framework for managing program performance information, which is referred to as FMPPI, which is issued by National Treasury, exactly what those guidelines are and how can the SIU fit its objectives within that in terms of its mandate, within those requirements. That will then ensure that your objectives, your indicators, and your targets are clear, well-defined, and smart. Then, once that exercise actually happens, on a quarterly basis, there has to be a process in place, similar to how we've just mentioned earlier with regards to the Department of Justice, where there's a proper verification exercise on a quarterly basis during the quarterly reporting cycle, where that information is validated. So in other words, actual performance is validated against source documentation to ensure that the source documentation is there. That will then resolve the reliability issue. And then obviously having systems in place to make sure that how the information is collated throughout the year in order to ensure that there's proper monitoring and control over that information. So all information is then verified for credibility prior to it being reported quarterly and in the annual performance report. With regards to the public protector, it's merely the one issue of not all planned targets being achieved for the financial year. With regards to HR management, it's just the Department of Justice that had findings in the audit report. Basically, it comes down to three issues. The one is appointments. So the organizational structure was approved quite late in the financial year. So appointments were made not in line with an approved organizational structure. Then the vetting of employees was not always done. Leave management, there were some shortcomings in that area, and some senior managers not have performance agreements for the year under review, or they did not sign them within the prescribed period, which is 31st of May of each financial year. With regards to IT controls, we will not be going into each entity like we've done in the past, because the issues are generic across all of these entities. However, what we will find is that the magnitude on the SIU is quite large compared to the others, but the actual issues are exactly the same. I think in order for us to understand how IT fits in, because we've got departments and entities, I think it's important to understand also the role of CETA, the role of system controllers within departments, the entities that are not required to actually abide by CETA requirements. In other words, they have their own platforms, etc. And this will give us some idea, just to put it into perspective. So in other words, with regard to CETA, which is the State Information Technology Agency, they provide the overall platform with regards to the transversal systems, which we refer to as usually BAS, PERSEL, LOGIS. In the case of the Department of Justice, it's JYP, Justice Yellow Pages, which serves primarily as their LOGIS system, which is for procurement and asset management. Then, the overall environment is the responsibility of CETA and National Treasury. However, at departments, we have what we call system controllers. And the role of the system controller is to actually manage user account management, which we will talk to just now, and access controls to the systems. And what we will find is that this type of controls, which is your disaster recovery plan, which is backups, they call it the SDLC, the life cycle when you're going around and procuring a system, user account management, access controls, etc. These are what we refer to as general controls. So it's your overall body of controls that must be in place before we can start going and relying on the application controls. And what we will find generally in the environment is that the general controls are not yet adequate in order for us to then go into the systems itself and to test the various controls within those specific applications. So in other words, going into BAS, checking on the input, the processing, the output, seeing the rules that are within the systems, etc., to ensure then that we can start relying on the applications, which will then reduce the amount of substantive work that we do, and we start focusing more on the tests of control. So primarily what you would see on all our audits is that it's a substantive approach, which means that we go and we look at physical documentation to do all our testing. There's very limited or there's hardly any reliance on the IT side. And if that happens, if the general controls are sound, we then start looking at the application controls, and if those are sound, then we can start focusing on the internal control environment rather than going and looking at every substantive or every detailed document. So what we will find generally here is that the issues are fairly similar in the sense that it's user account management. So in other words, there's no monitoring of the users that have been created, of logs of their activities, etc. Then unauthorized access, in other words, password controls are inadequate in the sense that there's no lockout in that if you put in your password thrice and it's a wrong password, then the system should actually throw you out. Some of them are set to 99, which means that you've got sort of an unlimited number of password attempts. So there's an unauthorized access risk. And also monitoring of access to ensure that the correct level of authority has got the correct level of access to the system. So in other words, the higher you are in the level of authority, the more, you know, that your access to the system is actually in line with the level of authority that you have. So those are fairly the generic findings on user account management and on access controls. Then you come to IT governance, and primarily here it's an issue with regards to the IT strategy, the governance framework, and the overall IT environment. How does it sit within the organization? So to have it documented, exactly where does IT sit within the environment? And that will also talk to what we call disaster recovery plans, business continuity plans, and backup procedures. So in other words, in the event of a disaster, how soon can the environment actually come up live again within a very short space of time? So there are deficiencies in that respect. And what we'll find is that in some of the entities, there are funding challenges. Funds have now been set aside for the 12-13 financial year in order to rectify at least the governance part of it with regards to the disaster recovery plans, IT governance, and business continuity plans. With regards to backup procedures, there should be backups on a regular basis, we could say daily, and it should be on at an off-site storage facility so that in the event of a disaster, your information can still be retrieved from the off-site facility. So those, honorable members, are the findings by and large on all the entities that we've actually got from pages 11 to up to page 25 of this briefing document. So we're not going into the detail of each one of them. I think the findings have been explained at a high level. Then if you go on to page 25 of the briefing document, when we talk of material errors or omissions in the financial statements, here again we will not go into each of the entities, because the findings are exactly the same. In other words, the financial statements that were submitted on 31st of May actually had material errors, meaning that if we had to express an opinion at that point in time, then the errors being material would have led to qualified audit reports. It was the audit process that identified the material errors. It was in management that rectified them, with the exception of one, which is the Department of Justice, where not all errors could be rectified. Hence, the department was qualified with respect to one issue. All other entities received an unqualified opinion, meaning that all the errors, all the material errors that were identified were corrected by management. The root cause, in this case, we are saying that the time frame that management has in place to ensure that the deliverables are met, in the sense that allowing for adequate review time, you know, preparation and review time by your CFO, by the accounting officer or the accounting authority, by the CEO, by the audit committee, by internal audit, everyone pushes the 31 May deadline, that there's no time taken to work back from 31 May to say, in order to achieve this deadline, how can we bring in all those overall oversight roles and all those overall review roles in order to ensure that it's gone through all of those review roles before actually being submitted for auditing. And basically what we are preaching here to the entities is that have a financial year-end plan. So from now, have a plan in place to say that once 31st of March kicks in, what are the key dates that you are going to be monitoring? So in other words, in order to ensure that all your accruals have been brought onto your books, what is the last date by when you expect all your suppliers to have submitted all the invoices, statements, etc.? What is the last date to have done your asset counts? What is the last date to have got all your various purchase orders or whatever captured onto the system? To ensure that when the finance unit then goes and draws that information, all information is accurate and complete. So in other words, there has to be a financial year-end plan which works back from the 31st of May, bringing in the various financial issues that must take place and also incorporating the various levels of review that must take place. In other words, if the CFO needs 2 or 3 days to review the financial statements, build that in. If the accounting officer or the accounting authority or the CEO needs a day or two, bring that into the process. in order to be tabled at the audit committee, give the audit committee sufficient time, 5 days or 7 days, you know, whatever the arrangement is. That will then ensure that various levels have gone through the financial statements, various questions have been raised, various reconciliations would have happened, and that should improve the credibility of the financial statements that we receive on the 31st of May. The other recommendation that we are making is that as far as possible, if monthly financial statements can be prepared, so a full monthly set of financial statements, if that can be prepared, that must be prepared, but at least on a quarterly basis. So in other words, the finance unit with the CFO will review the financial statements to ensure that there's no unreconciled items, that all the amounts and all transactions have been captured correctly in the correct accounts. There's no misallocations, misclassifications, etc. All key reconciliations have happened. In other words, your bank reconciliations, debtors reconciliations, creditors reconciliations. So if all of these key controls, which we preach on a quarterly basis through our interactions, if all of these are taken seriously, we believe that this will go a long way in rectifying this issue. So when the financial statements are actually presented on 31st of May, it is, you could say, a final set of financial statements, which the audit process should then just confirm the figures that are sitting in those financial statements. So that takes us up to page 29, where we will now come to the financial health status. This is something that's been introduced the first time in this financial year for the 11-12 financial year. Within our management reports, and basically we've got three entities that we would just like to focus on, or four from a financial health point of view. The one which we mentioned earlier, which is the Department of Justice. The impact of not paying your creditors within 30 days, and I think we also have to appreciate that it's come from the previous year, which then means that you are using the 11-12 budget to fund 10-11 expenditure which wasn't paid in time. The impact being then that you've got now reduced funding for your 11-12 financial year, and thereafter you start paying your 11-12 creditors late, which then has a rollover impact now on the 12-13 financial year. So until something is done to have proper financial and budgeting controls in place, we're going to find that this cycle is going to continue on a year-on-year basis. In other words, meaning that you are going to keep on eating into your next year's funding just to cover your sort of your deficit or the expenses you still need to settle in the previous financial year. And there is an instruction note from National Treasury where on a monthly basis, every department and entity must report on its compliance with the 30-day rule. It's called instruction note number 34. Similarly with the NPA, it's the same issue about the 30-day turnaround. With regards to the special investigating unit, there's a specific circumstance here, which is its ability to charge for its services. And we are aware that there are amendments being proposed to the Act in order to allow the SIU.
It's all done.
It's all done, okay. So that should rectify that issue. With regards to the public protector, again, it's a 30-day issue with respect to payment of creditors. And also that the total current assets exceed the total current liabilities. Total current liabilities exceeds the total current assets. So you could have a liquidity point of view in terms of meeting the short-term needs. Then lastly, we've got the commitments by the executive. So in other words, through our engagements with the executive authority, being the Honorable Minister of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, we've received various commitments. Some of them we have seen action on. Some of them are a bit of a multi-year commitment. The first one being the vacancies, the filling of the vacancies in the supply chain management unit. This has happened. However, now the challenge is that to get the competencies and the skills at the regional level, which is in the provinces. So there is a task in place now where contract appointments and permanent appointments are being envisaged by the department to fill those vacancies in order to ensure proper supply chain management and asset management at court level and at regional level. However, there are still vacancies, which is a challenge at senior management level within the department, and the minister has committed that this will be looked into. Submission of third-party fund financial statements. We can report that financial statements were submitted for 2010-11 with 2009-10 as comparatives. 2008-09 and 2009-10 were not submitted individually in order for us to audit, and 2011-12 is still outstanding. The resolution of accounting and systems matters within the next 2 years for third-party funds, this is now one of your multi-year commitments. It's not going to be obviously resolved within a year or two. There's obviously funding implications, etc., but there are commitments in place to replace all aging and redundant systems, as well as to, in order to look at the IT governance side of it, in terms of disaster recovery plans, etc. Then further commitments which we obtained recently, we haven't evaluated these, but these have come through recently during our last engagement. With regards to supply chain management and asset management, the CFO to take control of that and to report on a monthly basis to the accounting officer. And what we've been recommending earlier on, that non-compliances by officials who continue, despite the controls in place within the department, there has to be some impact now in terms of holding officials accountable for continued transgressions. Then the reporting on quarterly performance against predetermined objectives will be strengthened, and there is a system in place which is called a true system, and this will be utilized in order to ensure collation, consolidation of information, and verification of the credibility of the reported performance information. Other matters of interest, there's been no unauthorized expenditure in the portfolio. There has been some fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but we can see that it's reducing year on year. And irregular expenditure, I did mention earlier, the impact of the department going back and re-looking at the two previous years to resolve the qualification matter. And there is a footnote here that says that the majority for 10-11 was actually identified in the 11-12 financial year through that exercise that was undertaken. And that's why you see that there's quite a spiral if we look at last year's annual report versus this year's for last year's figure. NPA. There's actually been a reduction. Special Investigation Unit has gone up. Legal Aid South Africa, which was the new finding on supply chain management, it wasn't there in the past. And Human Rights Commission has actually gone up from the previous year. Other AG reports, there were no investigations undertaken by the AG and there were no performance audits undertaken by the AG. Lastly, I'd like to take you through the A3 document in your packs. The first page, which is quite a colorful picture, it just gives the committee a high-level analysis of each of the entities. The R means repeat and is a legend at the bottom. So if you look at the red, it means that these are repeat findings, which are consistent with what we've just discussed. A means that those findings were actually addressed, and M means new findings, which is yellow. And then you'll find that the rest of the document is consistent with the briefing document. And what we've also said on the extreme right is what we call key drivers. So we've taken the three fundamentals of internal control, which is leadership, financial and performance management, and governance. And we've actually then analyzed it at the bottom so we can see where the focus should be. For example, if it's oversight responsibility, that's red, and it's a leadership issue, then it's the accounting officer and senior management that should take on that responsibility. If it's green, it means that we are quite satisfied that those controls are actually in place and they are actually working. Then lastly, on the next page, we will find that we've got firstly the top areas of concern, and we've gone through them, which is supply chain management. Specifically with the case of the SIU, it's a predetermined objectives, and obviously the inadequate compilation of financial statements, which we've discussed in quite a bit of detail, and that's quite prevalent in, you could say, almost every audit. What are the key messages? The transgressors should be held accountable, specifically with regard to supply chain management. action plan should be properly implemented to ensure that they address matters highlighted and other shortcomings. So in other words, what we are saying there is that instead of just addressing the finding that was raised by the auditor, and this includes external and internal audit, management should actually have an action plan in place that deals with the root cause of what is causing those findings. And the best way of doing this is to assign responsibility to a specific senior individual. So if it's HR, it's a line manager in charge of HR. If it's finance, it's probably the CFO or a financial manager. If it's assets, it may be your asset management unit, but the chief director there. And in this way, it will be senior leadership then taking responsibility to resolve audit findings. So there should be a level of responsibility assigned to a senior individual. There should be consistent tracking of progress on a monthly basis, either by EXCO or MANCO or whatever committee is there internally, a management committee. And again, the progress must be interrogated, discussed, engaged, debated, etc., to ensure that every line manager is actually delivering on the commitment that was made to ensure that there's no repeat audit findings. And lastly, to have proper time frames in place by when will that audit finding be resolved so that the root cause has actually been addressed rather than just addressing the system. And usually how it works is that internal audit during the normal audits will do follow-ups on the action plan, and they give management some sort of assurance or otherwise in terms of how management is doing against those action plans. And what we also caution against is that your time frame should not be the end of the next financial year. It should be well before the end of the financial year to ensure that then there's enough time in place to actually remedy whatever situations are picked up during the financial year. And also that if we leave the time frame right for the end of the financial year, there'll be just too many things to deliver on, and some of those issues may not have been actioned. And lastly, on the key messages is that CFOs and those charged with governance should properly review the financial statements. If we link this back now to the assurance model which we started with, we will find here that the CFOs and the accounting officers, CEOs, the accounting authority and the audit committees are towards the left and towards the middle. In other words, the extensive and the moderate level of assurance falls on those shoulders. Thereafter, coming to the portfolio committee, you'll see it's limited because the portfolio committee and the oversight structures do not have that level of involvement with the entity on a day-to-day basis. Then what we would like the portfolio committee to actually look into is to request entities to compile monthly financial statements, and if that's not possible, we would recommend at least as a start quarterly financial statements. To obtain confirmations from entities that financial statements have been reviewed by CFOs, accounting officers or authorities, audit committees prior to submission for auditing, and we can include in the internal audit as well. And what we mentioned earlier with regards to the work plan, a financial year work plan, so how will the financial statements be prepared working back from 31 May to ensure that every level of assurance or every level of review has got enough time to actually do a proper review on those financial statements. Then to obtain confirmation from entities that actions plans are in place, they are being monitored by the accounting officers, accounting authorities to ensure resolution of audit findings. And what we've also found is that there hasn't been, in some instances, much engagement between the chairpersons of audit committees and executive authorities. And we would like this engagement to take place. In other words, the audit committees can also start escalating their issues to ensure that the executive authorities can also start having a positive outcome, or can start driving a positive audit outcome. So it's confirmation from chairpersons of audit committees that regular interactions are taking place between the chairpersons and executive authorities. And lastly is the monitoring of quarterly key control dashboard reports of all entities with particular focus on compliance with laws and regulations and supply chain management. Lastly, it's specific to this portfolio. It's new legislation. The first one is quite generic. It applies everywhere. It's the supply chain management legislation. There's been some changes with regards to the preference point system, which came into effect on the 7th of December 2011. And this is what we mentioned when we spoke about the SA Human Rights Commission. The training interventions are not in place to ensure that the officials have this knowledge and they could comply with the new requirements. So this is going to be an ongoing area of development. Next is the new framework for strategic and annual performance plans. There's now a new framework in place which has come into effect from 1 April 2012. So we will be looking at that in our 2013 audits, where we speak of the annual performance plans and not just the strategic plan. So it takes a strategic plan. You then break that up for each quarter, and we will then monitor the progress against the quarterly targets. For departments, inventory, there is a move to start bringing inventory onto the financial statements. It is not yet effective. However, departments are required to now start bringing in systems in place to ensure that they can comply with those requirements. From your constitutional institutions and public entities' point of view, the GRAC framework, which is a framework developed by the Accounting Standards Board, that is also evolving on an ongoing basis, and there could be technical challenges in the future in terms of complying with that framework. Then specifically with regards to this portfolio, we've got the governance and transfer of functions, which is the Office of the Chief Justice, Third Party Funds, and CARA. We are aware of the developments with regards to the establishment of a separate department, which is the Office of the Chief Justice, and it's important that you all take heed that there could be specific risks with respect to transfer of assets, with respect to budgets, etc., which could create some challenges for auditors and for the portfolio committee and for management. With respect to the third-party funds and CARA, with respect to third-party funds, National Treasury has issued guidance in terms of the preparation of financial statements. So National Treasury has given approval that the third-party funds can prepare a separate set of financial statements. However, in order to resolve the impact on the vote, and we mentioned earlier what controls should be in place at court level and what controls should be in place from a system level and from a head office level. However, this will not take away the relationship between the fund and the vote. Now, in order to protect the vote, then there should be some legislation or legal status or governance arrangements with respect to the accountability, governance, and oversight of the third-party funds. In the absence of it being a separate entity in whichever form, it is going to, the funds will flow through the vote and the vote will continue to be impacted. So it's something that maybe just requires some intervention. With respect to CARA, National Treasury has still to finalize the accounting and reporting arrangements with respect to the preparation of financial statements. This is an ongoing issue. Up to the 11-12 financial year, National Treasury has given approval that the financials just be incorporated within the annual report of the vote. However, the letter last year stated that there has to be a decision now whether CARA will be consolidated within the department or established as a separate entity. And there's been no development in that area since we last engaged on our audit, which was in July. So there has to be some focus on that, and we are aware that the respective officials are actually engaging, but at this point in time, there's no clarity with respect to the financial statements, how it will happen in going forward. With respect to the NPA, there are amendments that are currently being considered with respect to amending the legislation. However, the finalization thereof needs to be prioritized in order to resolve the legal governance and accountability arrangements around the administration of the NPA. We are aware that there may be a move of moving towards a trading entity, etc., but we aren't aware at this point in time what is the status of that. So that could also create some challenges because although it is part of the department, it's still reported separately, and there's an annual exemption that National Treasury actually gives, and for the 12-13 financial year, that exemption hasn't yet come. So if it doesn't happen, then obviously there could be challenges on the justice audit with respect to consolidating the NPA within the Department of Justice. Then lastly, with regard to funding of operations, but I believe this has been resolved with respect to the SIU. That's my presentation.
The gentleman who's been talking to us is Mr. Yusuf Patel from the Audit
General
Office. Thank you, Mr. Cook. So we'll now deal with questions and comments. First, Ms. Schaefer, then Mr. Swart, and then Ms. Smuts. In that order, for now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you very much for that. And I must say the concerns regarding the SIU corroborate concerns that we've been expressing for quite some time about the management setting, but I'll leave that for now. I just want to ask you some questions, general questions regarding how you go about auditing. Do you audit statistics that the department refers to in the annual reports? Because I've taken issue with the NPA on the way they claim to have 90% conviction rates, when in fact they have 90% after they've taken off the 55% that have been withdrawn from court, and then they claim that they've got a 90% conviction rate. I mean, surely that is a misstatement of the true situation. Do you go into that kind of thing or not? If not, why not, and would you do it? Secondly, as far as how do you go about deciding whether money is recoverable or not? Do you look at whether they've made the correct assessment of that or not? And I ask that because previously in my previous life as a counsellor, we used to have officials of the department saying, well, somebody owes us money, but they've actually left the department now, so we can't recover it, which is complete rubbish. So is that so in this? What do you look into those issues? Yeah, I mean, can you just give us some enlightenment from your point of view regarding the third-party funds? Because I take your point of the improvements that have been made, but for a department to have third-party funds for 8 years in a row, qualified audit, is just simply unacceptable. Why has it taken so long? And how much longer do you think it's going to take before it's actually resolved? I mean, why are there no processes now in place? Why do you have to go and tell them that they must capture the records properly at the beginning? I mean, surely that's the most basic part of running an accounting system like that. Have you got a time frame as to when you reasonably expect it to be resolved? Thanks.
Steve Swan.
In the audit statements where there's a statement about leadership, and it seems this is often put in the Auditor General's reports where, for example, in NPA page 65, where it says the leadership of the NPA did not exercise oversight responsibility over reporting, compliance with laws and regulations, and related internal controls. Is that a general statement that is made in, I mean, what is the impact of that particular statement? It seems, you know, one sees that sentence a lot in audited statements. What is the impact of that? Are we improving? You gave us a huge amount of information, and we're going to unpack it. But generally speaking, is the picture looking better? You're trying to illustrate it with, and I must say, I didn't follow all the information, but do we see an improvement, not only NPA, on the whole overall picture? First, secondly, I appreciate your comments on the irregular expenditure being up due to, as I understood it, improved systems. So are we seeing an improvement, and is that why the irregular expenditure is up? And then there was a comment you made at the end about the NPA becoming a trading concern. Could you please pack that out? Huh? Is that purely from a governance perspective? Is that an ongoing discussion? Obviously, that is something that is a great concern to me. How can the NPA be a trading concern? It must only surely be the issue of it's an independent prosecutor. If that's for governance, I understand that. And then somewhere along the line, there was something about external work being done, payment, remuneration for external work. Can you just unpack that a little bit? Under what, I mean, surely the NPA is very, I think it was in the context of the NPA or one of the departments. Yeah, one would think that that there is surely enough work in the department that you shouldn't have outside work being remunerated, right? But just generally speaking, thank you. And thank you for your very comprehensive report. We do appreciate it.
Dean Smith, followed by Mr. Jeffrey.
Mr. Patel, in addressing...
Please stop. My apologies.
I said Mr. Patel. Is it Mr. Isaac or
Mr. Isaac? Yes, Mr. Isaac. My apologies.
In addressing the information technology issue, you referred to the fact that the problems occur across the portfolio. But I remember a report, I think last year, from the Auditor General's office, made it clear that the problems occur, of course, across government. They occur across all government departments. They are real problems. And the percentages were very high for a lack of security in systems and a lack of other functionalities. It made me wonder at the time. I mean, I can't remember whether it was your office who said it or I, but I think I couldn't help asking myself whether the failure of service delivery in South Africa isn't really at base a failure of the computer systems, the computer controls, because all of our administration, after all, is dependent on our computer systems. So I think that this is a serious problem. Now, last year, and that you must have ideas on where the real problems lie. Earlier this year, in the course of our hearings with the various entities and the department, it became very clear that CETA is a very basic problem. The fact that servers crash is directly attributable to CETA. I was encouraged during the actual budget vote debate, where I raised this, when the minister in his reply agreed wholeheartedly. And government ought not to be bound to use CETA. It is those entities, which shall for the moment remain nameless within this portfolio, who upped and simply got their own arrangements, who function the very best. So even the Minister of Justice and the Minister in charge of this cluster agrees that CETA is your basic problem. And I wonder if you wish, you may not wish, if the Auditor General's office wishes to remark on this. You did say that the overall environment is the responsibility of CETA and the Treasury. Now that way must surely lie some sort of a solution. The other problem seemed to me to be, one, the thing that you cite at every instance, the fact that the Department of Public Service and Administration has not finalized guidelines for government-wide IT a governance framework. So, I mean, how is anybody supposed to function? In addition, in 2002, in the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, the Minister of Communications wrote into that act, we passed it, not necessary, she could have done the executive function, but she undertook essentially, and made it a matter of law, to create for the Republic a cyber policy, undefined. That has simply never happened. And then lastly, the Cabinet, not long ago, took a decision that cyber security, the security of computer systems, was to be handed to the State Security Department, which department, of course, under the MIS system, the Mandela era, but practiced since then, the minimum information security system, anyway, as far as I know, continues to exercise monitoring and controls and give instructions on record keeping to all government departments inter alia. So to what degree the spooks have a role in this, I don't know. You may be able to tell me. So we seem to me to have policies half-formed, never formed, fully formed, other agencies involved, and CETA, and nobody is pulling the thing together and making sure that our computer system, upon which administration rests, is in good shape. Please, if you would like to comment on that. I actually think that the final solution is going to lie, it'll come from left field in the form of the information regulator, which we have just legislated under the Protection of Personal Information Act, as it will soon be. Because historically in other countries also, it's only once privacy, strangely, privacy legislation is passed, and you set up an information regulator, that the security of data systems actually becomes something that someone is inspecting, invigilating, ruling upon, and sitting in judgment on. So with a bit of luck, that law that we have produced through this committee will in fact be the one that gets the answer. But I think that is the problem. And I mean, just look at this. You describe under several entities how a virus attack, is this a historic fact? Due to a virus attack that resulted in several users experiencing account lockouts every minute, invalid attempts of three could lead to an increase in password reset requests. I mean, it's obviously something like that that made it possible to rob 40, was it billion, from the post bank, poor people being robbed, because somebody could hack into the post bank that easily. And so there's a great vulnerability across government, in my view, and one hopes for the sake of all of government, but the Apple program in particular, that it can be solved. May I ask you one other question? The matter of the material misstatements, which after the SCMU stated is the second big problem. I mean, how bad are the material misstatements? Are you telling us that the audit process actually works very well because if the audit process didn't allow correction, as you said, more would have been qualified. But we have this system in place where your process picks up the problems, they get corrected, and we have a better audited result. So are you saying that the system works? Are you saying that, how bad are you saying the material misstatements are? What is their root cause? Is it the fact that people are not looking up the Treasury website? How frequently should they look it up? Every day, every week, to see what are the new Treasury regulations? I got the impression for a minute there that there were regulations and new requirements being spewed out all the time. Can people keep up? Or is that wrong? Is it a nice, settled, stable system? And people must just make sure that from time to time, monthly, they keep an eye on the requirements.
Chair, thanks, and apologies for having to be out to attend another meeting. But my question is really just on the third-party funds. I don't know how much it was covered. I've gone through the documentation. But the department gets qualified audits every time because of the third-party funds. We ask them what are they going to do about it, and they tell us various things which sometimes change from time to time. They still have to brief us, but I see that, and the DG can correct me if I'm wrong, that they had applied to Treasury to be the third-party funds to be dealt with as a watch trading entity, but they haven't had any response from Treasury, so now they are looking at legislation. I don't know why Treasury is not responding to say yes or no. When I look at the documentation, you've got a section on you know, of the executive authority, comments by the executive, and under third-party funds, they seem to be blaming the computer systems. So that seems to be another way of tackling the problem. What I'd like to hear very clearly, and something understandable to non-financial people, non-auditing people, is as the Oversight Committee, what are you saying as the Auditor General's Office that the department must do to ensure that it does not get any qualifications with its third-party fund audit? What are you telling us, or can you tell us what we should be looking for in the quarterly reports of the department and asking them about the third-party fund? Because it just seems to me that everybody seems to have a different idea of how to address the problem, and I'm not sure if anyone has the right idea. And there may be an issue of outstanding financial statements from way back not being available. What happens then? Yeah. So that's that issue. And then I did raise with you before the meeting, you know, with the Human Rights Commission, you audited their achievement of their targets, but their achievement required publication, which had not happened. And it's a question, it would then appear from that that your auditing wasn't that thorough. Sorry. that's that. And then the, let me leave it there, Chair. Just the one other thing, on Mr. Swart's point about there's no leadership, I mean, you put that down for the Legal Aid South Africa as well, and they assured us that was a sort of general item. They only had one thing that was wrong, but because if they had one thing wrong, you had to say in general that there was no leadership. Shouldn't you qualify it? I mean, there must be varying accounts of a lack of leadership on financial matters. So, surely would be degrees of better leadership would be needed. There is no leadership. There's absolutely no leadership, you know, depending how you go down the line. But it just seems to be you get something wrong, even if the audit is unqualified, and you get then there is no leadership.
Mr. Isak, just from me, if I may, that observation was made by several entities who appeared before us in the past week, that sometimes the AG's reports is a cut and paste. But when they find something, they just take a standard criticism or observation and stick it in there. And then, as Mr. Jeffrey points out, you ask the question, but is this an absolute or is it just a minor thing? Two questions. One, the relationship between poor financial health and poor performance against predetermined objectives. Can you repeat your comments about that? Because you did make some remark about it, and we were trying to concentrate and somehow we missed it. You report that amendments are being considered with respect to legislation governing an NPA. The head of the NPA, or the acting head, is sitting behind you. She's mystified. She doesn't know a thing about that. As I looked at her, and she's shaking her head vigorously. So you would need to provide some clarity as far as that's concerned, please.
Thanks very much, Chair. Okay, on the issue of the audits, I'll try and stick more or less with the order in which the questions have come. With respect to the auditing of statistics, if it falls within the area of performance information, in other words, based on what the strategic plan says and based on your actual achievement, we will then audit it, but we do not audit the entire performance information. So in other words, we select various, depending if it's a department, you will select two programs or one program depending on the magnitude of the program in terms of our methodology, and if it's an entity, then you select objectives. So you do not go through each and every performance information statistic that that's sitting in the report. So it is done very much similar to a normal financial audit basis. Is done on a sampling basis and is done on objectives that we do select. And that is why the audit report also speaks of, and if you look at the management reports which we give to entities, we actually specify in there which are the specific objectives or programs that we have selected. If it falls
to the manager, I just want to know, I mean, are you satisfied that it accurately represents the true situation when they look at percentage of cases after they've taken off the 55% of cases that actually were not dealt with? They claim these are the cases that were dealt with, but then they say we got a 90% conviction rate, when meanwhile 55% of them have actually been withdrawn from the court. Are you satisfied as the AG that that is a true reflection of the situation in the department?
Okay, I'm not specifically involved in the audit, but I can come back to the committee in terms of the audit, you know, how the audit process worked and how we did actually confirm So I will come back to the committee chair on that. But generally, if it's information that's sitting outside of the performance information and the financial statements, then we just have a read through it to make sure that it's not inconsistent with the rest of what we've audited. So we're not going into each and every detail if it's sitting outside of the annual performance report. But we will come back to the committee on that. In terms of money being recovered or not, we do question in terms of how long has the money been outstanding, what steps have been taken to recover the money, why is the money not recoverable, and what steps have been taken in instances where the money is considered to be not recoverable in terms of trying to recover that. And only if it's really, and you will find that from an audit process point of view, if the disclosure has been made adequately in the financial statements, from an audit standards point of view, there's nothing more that we could do except emphasize that in the audit report. And I think there are one or two audit reports where we've emphasized material impairments. In other words, debtors were considered to be non-recoverable. Management has disclosed that in the financial statements there are material, so we've actually got an emphasis of matter. So that is an avenue that we do use to highlight where we are not totally happy with the route management has taken. I think the third-party funds issue, with your permission, Chair, if I can come to that last, so we can just focus on the remainder. In terms of the related internal controls, there are standard paragraphs, but we also do apply our judgment, and it may just happen that it's not consistently applied, which is something that we will consider. However, we can't play around with the words. In other words, to say leadership, instead of just saying leadership did not adequately, or leadership did not always, we can actually align the paragraph and the sentence to the specific circumstances. So the point has been noted. However, with regard to related internal controls, what we're basically saying is that the leadership will perform the overall oversight, or the leadership, meaning the accounting officer has the oversight responsibility. But how do you do that? You do that through internal controls. You can have a compliance checklist. You can have whatever internal controls that you think fits the environment. So what we're saying is that in the absence of those internal controls, you could therefore not perform proper oversight. If, for example, the internal controls were in place and then your oversight could not be exercised, obviously we can amend the sentence to suit that environment. Thereafter, with regards to irregular expenditure with respect to the department, what they are basically saying there is that there were, subsequent to the to last year's qualification, which was the second year consecutively that the department received a qualification, and in an extensive exercise was undertaken by the department with the establishment of an internal control unit, and where this extensive exercise was undertaken in going back to all payment batches and procurement, etc., to identify all instances of irregular expenditure. However, this could have improved the control from a detection point of view, but not from a prevention point of view. So the concern now moves to how sustainable are those controls that you have put in place. And this is why we mentioned earlier that this department is specifically a case in point where there's various controls in place in terms of checklists and having controls on the system itself to ensure that you actually have obtained the three codes, you have gone through the process, etc. But even with those controls in place, instances still continue to be identified, which means that the controls in place are not being then monitored. And if the controls are in place and officials are not completing it honestly, then obviously there has to be some accountability and disciplinary steps taken. So while the detection controls might be working, the idea is that you need to prevent it. That's what the PFMA requires, that you should actually try and prevent irregular expenditure. So we think that the preventative aspect needs to be looked at. And also it doesn't mean that if you are sort of detecting your irregular expenditure, your controls are working. Your controls are not working. In other words, for how long are you going to sustain this? If officials leave or there's new changes in the regulations, etc., you are going to go back to where you were, in the sense that you are going to not be picking up irregular expenditure which will be picked up by others. So on the NPA, with regards to amendments to legislation, we picked this up through our discussions that we've that we've had with the Department of Justice. And I think it was my error. It wasn't the trading account. We informed that it would probably be a constitutional institution. But that is something we have picked up through our discussions. I was also in that discussion. Yeah. So it was a constitutional institution, not a trade, but that was just my error. So that is what, but we're just raising the flag that even in the absence of that, my other point still remains that annually there was an exemption given, in other words, preparing one set of financials for the department and the MPA. For this year, that exemption hasn't yet come. So if it doesn't, it does have an impact in terms of the vote then consolidating MPA. So there will be, so what we're saying is that rather whatever the uncertainties are, they must rather be clear, because these are what we're calling emerging risks. They could have an impact on the audit. Remunerative work done outside of the department. Basically how this works is that these are employees who are working in the department. And basically you are not precluded or prohibited from doing any work outside of your employment. However, you need to obtain permission from the executive authority first. So these are individuals who have been performing work other than their normal duty. So they haven't been doing work in other words, they didn't have a conflict within the entity that they are employed in, but they are doing work for other entities within the various spheres of government outside of their employment. And for that, you require the permission of the executive. And in this case, it was that permission was not obtained. In other words, they did not actually request to get permission in order for them to do the work. And these are normally picked up through our various CATS checks that we do with respect to, now it's called CIPC. You know, we used to refer to as CIPRO searches. And we try and match employers within the state to entities in which they have an interest. So it may not be that we will have a figure where we could tell you that, for example, it's 100 million rand worth of work that's been done. It's just that there's matches there, and we then go back to the department and ask them, have these people declared their interest? And can you show us that they've actually got permission to do the work? And in this case, we did not get evidence that they had actually declared, or that they had got the permission of the executive in order for them to be able to do the work. But it's not prohibited, it's just that you need to follow the proper process in getting the consent of the executive in order to do that. With regards to, I think, IT, I think there's nothing much that I could add.
The general picture. Two steps forward, one step back, one step forward, two steps back. Are you able to give that general picture? Is the situation generally improving? Are you in every area? Yes. I understand the third party fund has always been a problem.
There is improvement. However, what we are seeing is that the recurring findings are still there, and that is something that then must be actioned. And that is why we are trying to really harp a lot and re-emphasize a lot on action plans and accountability. Because if you look at it, the picture, the findings may move from one year to another, but the overall picture still remains the same. In terms of supply chain management, has been there, it's still there. HR management has been there, it's still there. Predetermined objectives, we've seen quite a bit of improvement in that area. However, the compliance part is something that really needs to be looked into. There could be an excuse in the sense that the focus has been so much over the past few years moving towards financially unqualified, so the eye was kept off the ball, but I mean, it's something that's neither here nor there. The issue is that the repetitive issues still keep on coming up, and that is something of concern. And that is why we're also saying is that through the audit process, the detective controls are now being improved, but the preventative controls are still there. So in other words, the issues will still continue to be reported. So we are on the same spot, but people are just more knowledgeable, that's all. But there's no real improvement in terms of moving towards clean administration. Okay, IT I think on the IT side, there's nothing more that I could add. I think you've captured more than what I could have said. On material misstatements, there's no specific. The guidance that management needs to, continuously turn to National Treasury on is more on the supply chain management and on the governance side. In other words, there's continuous guidance in terms of internal audit committees, etc. Audit committee charters, internal audit charters, best practice, etc. So there's a lot of information, risk management. There's a lot of information on National Treasury's website, as well as on supply chain management, because that is the source of the regulations. And that is something that, unfortunately, maybe the communication channels are not adequate or what, but you'll find that entities learn a lot from other entities, because there's always someone who's seen something that you haven't seen. So what we are saying is that within the departments, the supply chain management experts need to, maybe on a weekly basis or whatever, get onto National Treasury's website, see what the latest guidelines are, and make sure that it is. Unfortunately, we've seen that the communication channels do not always work as they should, and sometimes you pick up things, through hearsay rather than being informed via some paper, but the documents are there. So I think it's just one area that on a continuous basis, specifically supply chain management, the unit, someone must be designated to, on a continuous basis, make sure that the department's policies are updated in line with the regulations. It's very easy to step up on that. With regard to financial statements, we're not talking here of technical issues. In other words, just to give an example, like residual values, which is very highly technical, should it be 1 rand or 5 rand or 100 rand, we're not talking of that. Basically, what we're saying is that the basic asset counts, the basic reconciliations, ensuring that financial statements, there's a proper file or documentation backing up the figures. And a perfect example is this area of irregular expenditure, where when we get financial statements, the irregular expenditure is very minimal, or if at all. And during the audit process, you start picking this up. And then management goes back and does an extensive exercise, and they tell us, okay, that's the figure. So it's basically through the audit process that, so irregular expenditure is in the majority of cases. The other area is asset management. In other words, the fixed asset counts and the amount sitting on the asset register may not tie up to what's sitting on the financial statements. So then an extensive reconciliation exercise happens. Assets are either identified or they're identified as lost or stolen or whatever, and thereafter only all the adjustments are made to the financial statements. So asset management is a big area. The second area is irregular expenditure. So those are the two areas. I mean, expenditure management is, you do pick that up via your irregular expenditure. You might pick up some areas on expenditure management. Revenue generally is not a high-risk area because it's mainly voted funds and it's mainly transfer payments, so you don't see much under the revenue. But the key areas are assets, liabilities in the sense of your normal creditors, accruals, etc. And that's because of weak controls throughout the year. It's not an exercise that you can do right at the end of the financial year. In other words, if you start preparing monthly or quarterly financials that are properly reconciled, in other words, if you've got suspense accounts, someone needs to go in and clear those suspense accounts on a monthly basis. And that is the only way then that you will know, is it a true liability, is it revenue, or where should these accounts be sitting at? So what we are preaching is that if you can't do it monthly initially, at least quarterly do a comprehensive set of financial statements, properly reconcile, good disclosure notes. Obviously not the technical aspect of, as we said, residual values and useful life, but just the basic, does the fixed assets register agree to what's sitting in the general ledger, what's sitting in the financial statements? Are all your creditors and statements reconciled? Are all your invoices captured? It's just those basic things which will then give you some assurance that your accruals are complete, things like that. So it's the basic controls that we are talking about. And even in the absence of an advanced IT system, those basic manual things can still happen and give you credible information. Okay, financial health versus underperformance. I think if we link where you said this trend of paying creditors late, what happens then is that it has a direct impact on your cash flow and on your financial management. So in other words, you are paying last year's creditors who should have already been paid last year. So we would only expect at the end of March to only have creditors that have invoiced you. By the end of February, there should be a few, if there's any disputes or whatever. But by and large, it should only be creditors who have invoiced you during March, if the 30-day rule is strictly followed. So creditors outstanding for more than 30 days should only be by exception, and there should be really valid reasons. Either the invoice is not valid or there's still a dispute with the creditor, etc. But what we're seeing is that when invoices are not paid timely, it has a rollover effect on the next year. So in other words, you are already eating into next year's budget, which then leaves you with less money to do next year's activities. And what happens then is that your next year's budget is already aligned to your performance. So in other words, you now have less money to do what you committed to, or, you know, what you said you are committing to do in the next year. So instead of 100 million, you're now left with 80 million, but you've committed to doing 100 million rand worth of work in terms of your performance information. So in other words, you will definitely underachieve. And if you just do it theoretically, you'll probably achieve, you know, underachieve by 20%, because now you've got 80 million instead of the 100 million. So the rollover and the knock-on effect will continue if proper financial and budget monitoring is not undertaken. Again, this is not a year-end exercise or an exercise to be done at the end of the third quarter. It has to be done at least on a quarterly basis when those quarterly reports are done. And in fact, ideally, even on a monthly basis to know exactly what, you know, what you projected your income to be, what you projected your expenditure to be, how far are you, exactly where are you underspending, where are you overspending, if there's overspending, where are you going to cut back without compromising on service delivery. So these are the types of decisions that we're actually communicating through the link between financial and performance management. Okay, I think the NPA amendments we've covered. Okay, then the last issue, according to my list, is the third-party funds issue. With respect to third-party funds, we don't have to now go back too much because we've received financials for 31 March 2011. They have been audited but not tabled. So, in other words, there is a basis to work from. So it's just now from 1 April 2011 to 31 March 2012 that we expect financial statements for, and we haven't received them yet. I think when you engage with the department, there is a commitment that it should come soon within the next month or two. However, basically, I'll just repeat.
Let's quickly ask, when were you meant to receive them by? Because I thought, we've got your audited reports for the financial year ending end of February 2012. Should they not have been submitted a long time ago?
We received the 2011 financials in March 2012. And ideally, you should receive 2 months after the end of the financial year. So we should receive 2012. You should have received by 31 May 2012. But because of the exercise that was still undertaken on the 2000, there were no financials after 2008. We received 2011 with 2010 as comparatives. 2008-09, there were no financial statements prepared, and the department is not going to prepare those because we are looking forward now, and we've taken that into account in our audit report, which, as I said, has not yet been tabled.
I just want to ask a question based on that. The department issued a statement to say they have, in fact, submitted the 2009-2010 financial statements to the Auditor General. And they've made that, I think, on the 19th of March. And now you are saying something different.
Yeah, I did mention that they submitted 2010-11 with 2009-10 as comparatives. But because they did not submit 2008-09, they couldn't submit 2009-10 on its own. Because obviously you need 2 years of financial. So we've audited 2009-10 and 2010-11 as part of one process. However, 2011-12, which are the audit outcomes that we are talking to now, we haven't yet received financials. They should have been submitted on 31 May, 2012. However, at that point in time, the 2010-11 audit was still in progress because of the late receipt of financials only in March 2012. So I think management is in the process now of finalizing the 2011-12 financial statements, and we do expect that in the next month or so we should get those financial statements for auditing. However, the impact, which I think just for the information of the honourable member, I did mention that it's basically three areas that need to be looked at in terms of improving the environment within the TPF, and we will then talk of the link between the third party funds and the department. The first area we mentioned is the systems. In other words, each.
Fine, I'll the record. What I was hoping for was that you could give us a document that we could almost sort of put a checklist, put to the department and then tick, that you supply that. But if you've raised it when I was out, you don't need to go over it again. But it would be useful if there's some kind of checklist. I know this might sound very basic and simple, but maybe when it comes to financial matters, maybe we are rather basic and simple people. But that might help.
Chair, I've no objection to that, but I mean, essentially it boils down to, and it doesn't address the bigger problem. They were told they have to look at the systems, the JDAS, we know that. Each court shouldn't be separate, they should be integrated. It's a people issue, they should be daily controlled, and it's proper record keeping. Now, that can be put fruitfully down on piece of paper, but what is the longer term answer? Does Ms. Sindane, good morning, wish to create an entity, trading or otherwise? And where are we on that? And is she not waiting for an answer from Treasury?
Yes, but my problem is if you say they must look at the systems, okay, so we say to them, look at the systems, and they come back and they say, we looked at the systems and we've made improvements, but what do they mean to do with the systems? That's the sort of thing I'm asking.
Okay, what I did mention was that the systems is one part of it. The other is the people and the other is the records. The thing is that you can have the systems, but if the people are not skilled and competent, I mean, your system is not going to fix your issue. And what we also mentioned was that let the daily and the monthly controls happen at the court level. In other words, proper cash controls. How much cash was received? Typical to a supermarket chain, the cashier does not go home until the till is balanced. Similar to a bank environment, you do not go home until the cash balances. That's the type of discipline you need at the court level. And that will also resolve the cash shortages problem that you have. So cash shortages will be identified immediately, knowing exactly what went wrong and how it's going to be fixed. So that's the first basic control is discipline with respect to the cash controls. The second is on a daily or weekly basis at least, is proper bank reconciliations, because to do monthly bank reconciliations in that environment, it runs into thousands of pages. So that should happen at the court level, and that those competencies should be enhanced to ensure that those controls happen. The third control at the court level must be basic data capturing. In other words, just validating who's come in, whose money is it, where does the receipt go, where does the payment go. There are interventions that the department has put in place in terms of flow charts, etc., but those just need to be, there must be proper control over that to ensure that the basic inputting of that information is correct. That is all that you should expect at that basic level. Thereafter, with respect to the analysis and the drawing of financial reports, and we acknowledge JDAS is not a financial system. You're not going to be able to draw financial reports. But at least if the integrity of the basic information is correct, it will be much easier to draw proper to analyze it and then to ensure that there's proper financial statements that can be generated out of that information. But that analysis and interrogation and reporting should be validated and should happen at head office levels. In other words, the challenge you have is that the solution is not complex. It's the magnitude of the locations and the geographic. I mean, you've got 500 or so record centers that you will have to ensure that they are consistent in this. So that is the problem, is the magnitude. And you need head office teams who are competent on financial issues to go and then analyze that information, validate it, ensure that that they talk to the records. The record keeping also, the courts and the court managers should be responsible for that. So all that they need to do is keep the record safe, make sure that the information that's input on there and the basic daily controls and weekly controls are working. The rest of the more complex issues in terms of generating reports and analyzing and reporting, you should have a head office function responsible for that until the courts are capacitated with skills and competencies. So that's basically the people issue that we're talking about, and the record management. Just ensure that the records are kept, because the practice has been that after a certain period of time, within a year or so, records are destroyed. And only during the previous audit was there a circular issue to say, please keep the records. And the other challenge was that with not having an audit for so many years, you've created that environment of, you know what, I mean, we just carry on as we are. It is now with having an audit, hopefully some disciplines will be created with the lessons learned during the audit. So the one is a system issue, which is going to be a multi-year issue, because, I mean, it comes at a cost. And also to go and source the right system and to ensure that it works for you, etc. And then to get all, roughly 500 courts all onto one system. So that will be an exercise. So I think the focus for now should be on just ensuring that at basic court level, the information that's put onto the system and the records are properly managed and maintained. I think that will assist us. And then the last issue was the record keeping. So just making sure, I think those are the basic things. If those things work, and in head office, without just relying on the information that comes through, go and on an ongoing basis, use the internal audit function on an ongoing basis. The challenge is that you're not going to be able to visit every court every year. So you might visit 50, and all 50 are functioning well. The auditor goes to another 20, and things are not in place because that discipline hasn't got there. So, I mean, how it will happen in terms of getting court managers up to head office or just delegating this to regional offices, those are options that can be explored. But every court has to function on some sort of consistent basis to ensure then that the information flow is correct. So I think that is the challenge. The only other option is to then separate the fund and the vote. And that is something that I think management is exploring as well. So whatever funds flow through the third-party funds do not have an impact on the vote. So if there's transfers that must happen to the National Revenue Fund, it happens directly from that entity, whatever the entity type is, without impacting on the vote. But I think that's, in my mind, those are, I think, probably your only two solutions. Either get the people issue fixed and the records, the system will take some time, or to establish this as a separate entity.
I'm just trying to work out what the point is of the separate entity or excising third-party funds from the department. And unfortunately, the one reason I can see is that the department then is free to get an unqualified audit. And it's just the third-party entity that continues to get... Is that the only real benefit from it? No, I think it's from the Auditor General's office. I mean, they've talked about three different things, and what is the benefit of being excised? Will it mean the management of the funds is easier, or will it just mean that the department is released to get a unqualified audit without being encumbered by the horrors of the third party fund?
See, if you look at the vote's financial statements, it's basically money in and money out. In other words, money received from the third party funds to be paid over to the National Revenue Fund. That is all that's happening within the vote account. So there's really nothing. There's really nothing much happening. It's just that because the funds are flowing in, that is having an impact on the vote. So, I mean, whichever way it works, from an audit point of view, I mean, I can't make the call now as to which option should the department go with. But there's only four line items that are impacted: is the departmental revenues, in other words, money that's received from the third-party funds, and then receivables for departmental revenue. in other words, money is still to come from the third-party funds, then the provisions, which is the money that you've already received, which you now need to pay over to the revenue fund, and then it's contingent liabilities, which is a shortage is sitting in the third-party funds, which the department will have to make good if those funds are not recovered. So really, there's no real, it's just an in and an out. So from a vote perspective, I mean, it doesn't serve any purpose.
Come back to CETA, and you've made certain references to CETA, the fact that it provides the overall platform and the overall environmental responsibility is CETA's and Treasury's. Now, we've been told by entities, and this position is shared by other departments and entities that fall outside purview of this committee, that CETA is just about ineffective. It is ineffective. Yes, it's there by statutes, but when departments and entities approach CETA as the law requires them to do so, what they get back is hopelessly inadequate. Has the Auditor General conducted a performance audit? Now, this has nothing to do with the Department of Justice and the entities in the justice family, but we can't ignore this fact because it's come at us so often from different quarters that we have to ask you to look at that. The second point, which if you are unable to respond to, I will understand, but I'm going to put it to you anyway. Department of Justice was forced to take a 600 million rands cut in its budget. Now, would you agree that this cut is going to have an effect on the department's ability to fulfill its mandate? My last question relates to what is called the integrated criminal justice system. Honorable members must help me here. I know this ICJS came about some years ago. It's still there. Large sums of money are pumped into it. Again, my colleagues in other committees, police and so on, want to know from me how much money goes into this. Where does the money go to? Is the taxpayer getting value for money? My response to them was, we're going to have to ask the Auditor General to look into this matter. Because from the police's point of view, they say that what they can see is that the police have bought a few computers. But when we look at what should be getting in return, it's little or nothing. Will you be able to do something? I don't expect you to do it overnight, because obviously that won't be possible. Those are the three issues, please. Can respond now. If not, fine.
Thanks, Chairperson. For the performance audit of CETA, I'll raise that within the office to see if that can be brought in. But by and large, performance audits at this point in time are happening on like sector at a sector level. So, but I will take that up. 600 million cut. I mean, I've given the picture to say that if you look at, I mean, you're already starting on a negative for 12-13 because of the accruals that you've accumulated, which you now have to make good in this financial year. So I think if my analysis is right, you've probably eaten already about 19%, 1-9, of your new budget just to pay off expenses that haven't been paid timely in the previous financial year. And the audit report does make mention of that had you actually paid those creditors on time, you would have had unauthorized expenditure. So the audit report does talk of this. So it will have an impact on the budget. Thirdly, the integrated justice system, we have identified that last year already, and we've already planned to have a look at it. So our IT auditors will look at it at the various departments, for example, justice, I think correctional services comes in, SAPS comes in, so there's various departments, and they will look at the system, how much you spend, exactly how far have they gone, because departments were being given funds to run with the system, but not all departments actually drew those funds. So there were some departments that said, you know what, we haven't done anything here yet, so it's fine, we don't want the money. So but it's something that we have noted, and we will look into that. It is part of the scope for this next audit, the 12-13 audit.
Just one more question. The irregularities in the supply chain management that you've seen, are there any indications in your opinion that indicate that it's related to corruption, or is it just inefficient?
I was on the matter you're discussing, the integrated system, which emanated from the 7-point plan, which was adopted by Cabinet 2007. If you look at Trevor Manuel's first, the Vision 2030, I don't know what the second final report says, but if you look at the first one, it'll tell you that justice is the only department of the three, the others obviously being correctional and SAPS. Justice is the only one of the three who at that point had done anything, had begun to put in place the system. The NPA has been working on, case management, and you're doing it with the police in certain respects. So there's movement, but it's all on the justice side. That's the answer. But I think it's wonderful that the Auditor General... No, it's wonderful that the Auditor General...
I want an answer from Dean Smith. I want an answer from the Auditor General's office. Because, you see, when DG Sindhane comes to us, we're getting it from her perspective and from the perspective of the department. I'm looking for a report that deals with the overall system and how it's been managed since 2007. The complaints from my colleagues and comrades are serious. They're not raising it.
No, Honourable Member, there's no indication of fraud. It's more inefficiencies in the system and lack of proper monitoring of those compliance regulations.
There's nothing else, Honourable Members. Can we take a...